The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1097. It's the 20th of June, 2018. And if you haven't been there already, please do give it a try. Our free app. It's voxmarkets.co.uk/app. And just download that. Search for a company on the homepage there by ticker or by the company's name. Hit the follow button, and if that company releases any news of significance, it'll be sent straight to the front screen of your phone via notification. All right, and you can create multiple watch lists, like for example, companies you own, company you're watching, small caps, large caps, anything. Okay, on today's podcast, we have Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy, PHE, and Keith discusses the significance of connecting their G3 DMG unit to Thornton Science Park's microgrid and supplying it with electricity this week. Also on the podcast, I have Emily Priestley, CEO of Goldstone Resources, GRL is ticker there, and Emma talks about the gold anomaly of over 8 kilometres in length identified at their Akrokeri Omes project in Ghana. Also on the podcast, Alan Green talks about Cadence, Catenay Innovations, Warpaint London, Bon Marsh, and Andalas Energy and Power. Of course, it wouldn't be Alan Green unless you mentioned them. Plus, as always, I have the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 5 most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy. That's PHE ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. It's always great to be here.
Yeah, and you had quite an exciting release yesterday, and we'll go into that. It's where you've actually got your DMG unit to power the microgrid or help supply power to the microgrid. And we'll go into the details and why it's significant in a bit. Before we do, Keith, people listening right now, not familiar with the company, can you just give us a 30-second summary as to what you're all about, please?
Sure. Powerhouse Energy is really unique in its ability to provide clean energy from end-of-life waste products. So we can convert end-of-life plastics, end-of-life tires, difficult-to-handle waste products, and extract the energy value from those in one of the most efficient and environmentally responsible manners possible, and deliver something like distributed electricity or completely clean hydrogen to displace fossil fuels.
Yeah, and whenever I've talked to people about you, I've said basically, listen, you do what, or you're attempting to do, and you've done trials that is proving this as we go along, but you're doing something that's almost amazing. You are taking unwanted waste, and you are generating wanted clean waste, and it's really this alchemy almost, isn't it, when you look at it in that respect, you know? So it's cutting edge. I mean, as yet, you're heading towards this commercial path, and I think the RNS out yesterday, like you say, in the announcement itself, you say it's a milestone step here, because you connected to the microgrid at Chester's Thornton Science Park and supplied it with electricity, and that's sort of proof, isn't it, really? The first, I suppose, it's the first bit of proof that this technology is fit for purpose, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. You know what, Justin? You've kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, we've known this was possible. We've engaged in pieces of it, and we've had our gas analyzed. And the physics has told us if we do X, Y will occur. And so the connection to the microgrid at the Thornton Science Center Energy Park was really the last step in this journey of proving that we can supply energy to commercial scale customers. Now, we're not running the entire University of Chester, and we're, excuse me, and, you know, I can't tell you exactly how many kilowatts we delivered, but the fact is that we're now contributing, we're now able to contribute at any time that the university requires it, we can fire up the demonstration unit and provide electricity to the energy center there. And so, again, this was something that has been the kind of brass ring that we've been reaching for, and now we've gotten there. And so it truly is an exciting time to have finally kind of dotted the I's and crossed the T's, and more importantly, crossed the road with our connection into the microgrid. And I think that another really important point is that this whole concept of connecting to a microgrid is one that is growing in popularity and awareness. And every major company and industrial suppliers and factories are all looking at how do we manage our own internal microgrids, and how do we engage in what's known as you know, distributed power consumption and generation. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that it's mechanisms like ours, like the DMG system, that allow us to take an unwanted product, what had previously effectively been an enemy, and turn it into a friend, and extract the energy value again in an efficient and environmentally responsible manner to deliver cleaner power wherever it's needed.
Yeah. So I understand. So now you're permanently connected, and like you say, whenever you fire up the unit, it can supply electricity. And I understand, you know, you're edging towards commercialization here, but as is such cutting edge technology, this obviously you're still experimenting, is trial and error all the way through. And so is that what's happening at the moment? Are you just also sort of, you know, fine tuning all the time? And
yes, and and so. So there's not trial and error all the way through. There is trial all the way through. Yeah. I just want to the fact is that we're at the point where we can predict the outcome, the quality of the synthesis gas, the constituent makeup of the gas, and what's necessary to use that to either run the generator, the gas gen set, or to run it through the mechanism that allows us to extract a pure stream of hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And so we'll continue with that. I mean, I don't know if people recall, but we actually are sponsoring a PhD program and a master's student as well up at the University of Chester focusing on gasification. So our intent is to continue to develop the science and to better articulate the theory behind this, because we think that this is something that is going to be a major player as we move forward. And we had, we had occasion last week. One of my colleagues and I were able to sit down with a small company, a 13 billion euro company, and discuss with them our philosophy of distributed modular gasification. And their eyes lit up, because these guys have been focusing on delivering really micro solutions to waste management and waste destruction, and do something worthwhile with it, to be able to produce clean electricity, or even better, to be able to extract hydrogen and divert fossil fuels from the ecosystems in which they're operating, was really quite validating for us. Mm-hmm. to be talking to a company that you know, obviously dwarfs us, and yet they were excited and enthusiastic about our approach, and felt like it was exactly the right thing to be doing at this time.
Yeah, that's encouraging. And okay, so what is next, Keith? What are we looking for next in the life and journey of the DMG?
Yeah, so the commercial engineering is ongoing on a daily basis. We're nearing the end of our delivery of the first commercial engineering design from which we will begin procurement and acquisition of components of the DMG system. Mm-hmm. And of course, at some point, once the completion of the engineering is finalized, then we can finalize the permitting and planning process, and then start driving aggressively into our procurement and siting of the equipment, and be ready for the commercial plant to be operational. So we're continuing to drive that process forward aggressively. Our cast of dozens continues to work tirelessly, and then concurrent with that, of course, we're engaged in a number of commercial discussions all over the world regarding the use of our technology in solving a variety of not only critical waste problems, but in providing both electricity and hydrogen as the hydrogen economy continues to burgeon.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Okay, Keith, well, if anyone's listening right now likes the sound of the progress you're making but not following the company as yet, give them the 3 quick bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I think today's 3 quick bullet points are yet again, we are the UK, the premier company in the UK that is going to be delivering hydrogen from waste. We can deal with difficult to manage waste streams like plastics and end of life tires and other things that heretofore have been sent to landfill or sent to incinerators. And incinerators have their place in the waste management ecosystem, but they're not nearly as efficient as our process is in extracting the energy value. We're the only company of which I'm aware that can extract the energy value out of mixed waste or mixed plastics and non-recyclable plastics and convert that extracted energy into a pure stream of hydrogen, which allows you to divert from fossil fuels. So the economics of what we do are extremely compelling. The environmental impact of what we do is extremely compelling. And we're the first in the country and the first in the world, as nearly as I can tell, that are able to do this. So now is the time to get on board.
Marvelous stuff. Keith, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I'm sure we will, Justin. Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Emma Priestley, CEO of Goldstone Resources. GRL is ticker there. Emma, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Now, you've had some news out, and some significant news, a gold anomaly identified at the Homas project, and we'll get into that in a bit, the detail of that in a bit. Before we do, Emma, for people listening right now not familiar with the company, explain or summarise, what is Goldstone Resources all about, please?
Thank you. Yeah, Goldstone, look, Goldstone's a story that's been around for a number of years. 18 months ago, I was asked to join the board to sort it out. And this last 12 months, I've done a complete turnaround. We've got new shareholders. And the turning point of that was Parakali Gold, who've got 28%. And Parakali are an gold investment company chaired by Bill True, who's had his own successes in the market. And the second turning point was bringing in BCM, who are one of the largest mining contractors in West Africa. So I'm bringing together the ingredients for the company. Now, Goldstone has had a portfolio of projects in West Africa, but the key focus is bringing the Akrakeri Hamasi project on the Ashanti Gold Belt into production. And that is where I have turned Goldstone from being a explorer into a developer and actually doing something meaningful.
Okay, excellent stuff. So, and you're saying that is, I don't even attempt to pronounce that. Is it Akrakeri? Is that
what you said? Akrakeri Hamasi, yes.
Ah, Akrakeri Hamasi.
And we are slap bang next door to the major Abwasi mine, which is a 42 million ounce resource that AngloGold Ashanti have, and we are their neighbours.
Yeah, so that's massive, isn't it? 70 for anyone listening, I suppose, on a basic level. They sort of put a benchmark, didn't they, about 1 million ounces resources for that and above for a standalone mine. Is that correct?
Well, everybody always goes for the 2 million ounces, but Look, Obuasi originally is in excess of 70 million ounces, but that mine's been going for, there's been activity there for 200 years, and they've depleted it somewhat, but they're quoted in their annual report as 42 million ounces still being underground.
Yeah. And the reason why you say that's next door, for people not aware, I mean, it's all about geology and the postcode and where you are and where you're situated, so you're very close to that. So take us through the news. A gold anomaly, over 8 kilometres identified at your project. Yeah, take us through the detail of this, if you could, Emma.
We are indeed. And I'm going to bring in Obuasi again, because we are an extension of what Obuasi is, where the we've got two former old mines on the property. We've got the Akrakeri mine, which was abandoned in 1909. And that was abandoned due to an inrush of water, according to the mine manager's records that I have read. And of course, today we can cope with inrushes of water. We have the technology. Akrakeri mine is but 6 kilometres from the Obuasi mine. And going further up into our Hamasi trend, that takes us up into being about 10 kilometres from the Obuasi mine. The zone that we're sitting in, we host gold, and these recent results soil geochem program we've done has highlighted that. And the results from it, we have amalgamated all of the historic data from the soils and some of the trenching. And that is what has confirmed this 8 kilometre trend along this Hamasi trend, as we're calling it now.
Yeah. And I'm looking at some historic trenching indicating some decent grades there. You've got 15 metres at 6.31.
And, we do.
4.5 metres at 8.23. So what is next here then, Emma?
What's next here? Look, the abandoned pit that AngloGold Ashanti did in 2002-2003, The next steps is actually the scoping study to see if we can extend laterally along the strike from the Hamasi pit. And that would bring us nicely in, dare I say it, we want to start trial mining.
Okay, and when do you think this will happen? Hopefully, you know, what's the timeline on this?
The scoping study is happening now, and look, within the development that we're going to be doing over the next 6 months is looking at extending this either the Hamasi pit, or certainly looking at the pits that we defined earlier on this year that we called AK01s. And again, we're looking at similar deposits to what the Hamasi pit was, where they extracted 52,000 ounces at a recovered grade of 2.5 grams a ton. And if we're going along extension, then we're looking for similar results.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And what about some cost there? I mean, what's your cost? Are they quite low?
Yes, they are. I am running this on a shoestring. There's corporate costs right back. Yes, we've obviously got to pay our brokers and our NOBADs and our lawyers and our AIM fees. But the majority of this money, more than 80% of our money is going into the ground.
Excellent stuff. Marvellous. And it's a decent shareholder register there. I've just been looking at that. So, and that always stacks up.
We do. We don't have any institutions, but I have two very solid cornerstone shareholders, which is Paracale and BCM. And with the resources and the skill base that I have got with those two shareholders, that's actually the main driver for this company, keeping the costs down, because they're keeping an eye on it. And I've got the resources to my fingertips.
Yeah. And what is the resource size of this? Did you say that?
Well, I was meaning resources as in the skill set.
Ah,
but
okay.
My resource actually, the geological resource, we've got 602,000 ounces that is already delineated as a JORC resource.
Yeah.
Now, and that is confined to 4 kilometres.
Okay.
So what we've got now is the extensions, north and south, we should say northeast, southwest of that original Hamasi pit. That is our extension on the 8 kilometres. So, yeah, we've got a much bigger resource than what's already quoted.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous
and that,
stuff.
I'm going to add one thing there, and that does not include what we are looking at the old Acra Carey mine.
I see. Okay. All right. So plenty of work to go on there then.
We're going to be busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, listen, Emma, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of this project and what you're doing there, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
I will. The first one is the board. We have got a board that have got proven backgrounds delivering projects in Africa, and that's Bill True as the chairman. His history with the stock market started with Oxus Gold a few years ago. It's myself, former main board director of Lonro, where we had many successes throughout Africa. And then we have Angie List, who is the finance director to BCM, which is the mining contractors. We have a very strong board. Second is our postcode, where we are sat, and we are looking at an elephant. I know it's a corny phrase, but we are looking at an elephant in the herd of elephants along the Ashanti Gold Belt. And that is what we're going to be proving up. And the third reason is we are a company that is, we are getting into production as quickly as possible. Now, when I say production, it's not about building a big mine and building a big process plant, which has got all the yellow equipment and blue tanks. When we're getting into production, we will be mining, and we have a sister mine down the road that is owned by my second largest shareholder, and we will be looking at them to be processing our ore.
Excellent, Seth. And of course, that will keep the cost right down, won't it?
Certainly will.
Yeah. Emma, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
I'm fine, Jess. Like you, I'm battling the hay fever too. But I think my sinuses are now clear, so all good to go.
Yeah. Well, I just had a sneezing fit before we came on. I had to go to the house and get some tablets there. But I tell you what's got on my nerves more than hay fever is Trump. Talking about his threat of tariffs and all that stuff. That's what's holding the markets back and affecting liquidity at the moment. And I understand what he's doing. We understand the kind of deal he does now. He threatens, goes overboard on the threats, and then they meet. And it's like the old sales pitch, you know. If you go in somewhere, and in fact, you see them on Watchdog very often on TV, where these con men go around old people's houses and they say, right, we're going to set a nice little reclined chair now. Now, the price of this chair is $6,500. You think, what? $6,500? So I can probably do a nice deal here. And in the end, they bring it down.
Signed
to like,
they can have it for half price. That's
So they bring it down to about sort of $3,000. And even though that's almost double or triple what you can probably buy one of those for, it seems like a good deal. This is what Trump does with his things. He threats and says, I'm going to put $200 billion worth of tariffs, additional tariffs on. And then when they meet up, obviously he ratchets that down, but it seems like a good deal to the other side. Now, he's doing that with China. And I'm going to get on with it, because my portfolio this week has been pretty much, you know, permanently embarrassed in the colour. Just get on with it, you know?
Mine has taken a good kicking too. It's what the Americans call price conditioning. So you're conditioning your audience to that's where the price is. So as you say, you know, he does that very well. But equally, I think I mentioned this to someone last week that John Stover, the BBC correspondent who follows Trump, says actually there's a lot of respect now for Trump in circles that previously abhorred him completely, because he's actually just getting on. It's a different style of politics. We've never seen the president do this before and be so direct with the audience, but actually he's getting on with it. He's getting on and doing things. Yes, it's protectionism, the tariffs he's introducing and all the rest of it. But at the end of it, you know, the world will still survive, will still carry on. It's just the uncertainty of exactly what we're going to end up with that, as you say, is holding the markets back. But it is what it is.
But the thing is, I don't have any respect of him getting on. I mean, he may be, you know, he may have earned a pretty penny in his life. But I mean, if you look back at history, whenever there's been a tariff war, it hasn't played out well for anyone. And I'm just thinking, do you understand, if you want to help the people in your country, this is not the way to do it? That's what I'm worried about. So it'll just have a negative effect on the entire economy. And what he's done with lowering taxes and all that, he'll undo by putting these tariffs on. So I'm just worried about that anyway. So
he's an astute guy. I think he'll balance those two things out.
Well, that's debatable. He's an astute guy, yeah. You know. So,
He's. I think he's a lot. Okay. The person himself is. Everyone's got their own views on him. But actually, I think he's trying to do the right things for America, not so much the rest of the world. But he does. He will recognize that punitive tariffs will be damaging to the global economy and the US economy, which is it's in no one's interest. So I'm sure we will find a balance. And the price conditioning at the moment will probably end up somewhere below this, or there'll be concessionary arrangements that will actually work out rather better than we imagine at the moment. So
I just look at his hairstyle and think he's not that astute. If he can't see that mess on his head, then he can't see anything inside his head. I mean, if honestly, and I believe this, if you look at some of the most deluded people in life, the kind of people, right, who have really odd hairstyles, but but they can't see it, but everyone else can. It's like, majority of people can say, what's going on with this hair? And they think it's fine. That, to me, shows a certain level of delusion. You can't see what's on top of your head that's making people laugh. And anyway.
Well, I think it's what's not on top of his head. That's what he's trying to recover. It's the old vanity thing, isn't it? He's got that incredible toupee on top, and clearly without it, he'd be bald as a coot. But, he should basically go bald. I think that would be more statesmanlike, but there we go.
That'd be hilarious if he just came out one day he's bald. Let's look at some stocks now. What are you looking at?
Okay. First of all, I want to look at Cadence Minerals. Cadence Minerals, we've discussed on several occasions recently. Very quick summary. Cadence have investments in a number of lithium and zinc and cobalt mining companies, primarily lithium. Bacanora Lithium, of course, which has the Sonora project in Mexico. Net present value of $1.25 billion, and Cadence own 9% of Bacanora. So there are some key valuation metrics around that, of course. European Metals Holdings, which own the Sinovec lithium project in Czechoslovakia, strategically very well placed to supply the European car industry. And of course, this is the EV revolution that everyone's talking about. Penetration expected to be up to 35-40% in the next 10 years. Indeed, in some countries in Norway, it's already at that level now. So those figures could be conservative. Again, net present value with European Metals of $540 million. Cadence hold a 20% stake in European Metals. So just those two alone gives you some idea of the inherent value in there. Cadence announced last year that they were investing into the San Luis lithium prospect in Argentina. Historically, Argentina is well established as a lithium producing nation, and in fact the Argentinian president has removed the 5% tax on lithium exports, and he's improving the regulatory structure of the industry in Argentina to assist with this. Cadence have gone in with a small percentage to start with, and depending on what they find, their percentage will increase to the point where they had the right to buy 100% of the project, and they then transform themselves from being a mining investment company, which they will stay as, but into a mining and exploration company as well. Now, yesterday they announced that they had some geological data back from the region, and they've identified, or the geology team working on the project have identified high priority targets for lithium mineralization across 18% of the total 55.7 thousand hectares covering the six assets that they're working on, they've identified what they call spodumene-bearing pegmatite bodies, which sounds incredibly complex, but actually those are the minerals that bear the lithium. And they've identified this, and clearly with this data earlier on, they've come in ahead of schedule with this, and they will complete the study, and then obviously we move on to the next phase. But this has got the potential to be transformational for Cadence. There's, for example, if they find 25 million tons of lithium in the area, there's an enterprise value of $300 million. But given what they're finding so far, it could be higher than that. So we're right at the start still, but Cadence shares are currently around 0.21p. So, there's an awful lot of potential upside to come here with progress in this region alone. And clearly, if there are developments in their other investments, which of course include Bacanora Lithium, European Metals Holdings, the MacArthur Minerals project, and also the Aurum Minerals project as well, then as we stand at the moment, this Cadence, I think, represents great value as an investment into both EV technology, the supply of lithium to electric vehicle manufacturers, and also the development and production of lithium in the future.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that chart is slightly annoying. There's been a couple of false dawns, sort of got the false breaks there, above 50-day moving average. It's never got above 200-day moving average, though, which is now sitting at 0.285. So obviously if it bottoms out first, maybe worth looking at when it comes close to that, because that'll bottom out, it'll meet together. So worth keeping an eye on the chart there. Like I say, it's a good, it's a good diverse play on that, EV, clean energy environment thing, isn't it?
It's a low risk play too, because you've got that spread of investments into these different projects, and then also the new dimension, which is becoming Cadence, eventually becoming a mining and exploration company as it acquires 100% of the project. So that's there's a good spread of risk here, and I think if you were looking for a fund to invest into the electric vehicle technology or the supply of lithium to electric vehicles, this would be a very good place to start.
Yep, some stuff. Marvellous. What else have you got?
Okay, we spoke about Cat and Eye Innovation last week. CTEA is the epic code, of course. And this morning, we had three RNSs for the price of one. Cat and Eye Innovation is using blockchain technology to transform the digital media and entertainment industries. Just to give you an example, if you're standing in a hotel and there's a piece of music playing in the hotel, the blockchain technology will tell the artist that produced that music that their track or their piece of music is playing in that hotel, and it'll calculate and give them the royalties that they've earned from that music playing, which is quite incredible when you think about it. You think of where all the venues around the world where music plays. If it's played digitally, then that can be tracked using blockchain technology, which is incredible and transformational. And for artists who are self-producing, that's wholly revolutionary. I also mentioned last week that the Music Supremo, that's D-Ream, S-Express, and many others, are producing. Martin Heath is working with Cat and Eye Innovation to develop the Trusted Media blockchain application. And this morning they announced that the company had signed the first proof of concept agreement with a leading provider of rights, including music, to embed the technology and to test it. And this was the contract was signed at the MIDEM, the Marché International du Disque de l'Édition Musicale in Cannes, about a week ago, and it's basically a musical exhibition. So that was signed. Secondly, they signed a proof of concept agreement with Aston Villa Football Club to use their Onside Pro solution to manage community coaching sessions and community engagements. And thirdly, they've signed a new chief technology officer, a guy called Alan Simpson, who is best known for being the technical delivery manager for the BBC iPlayer project. So this is the guy that basically developed and launched and took the iPlayer out into the digital community on behalf of the BBC. So Cat and I are really starting to move now. I mean, this technology is going to be revolutionary for self-producers and for people in media and entertainment, and it's going to be very exciting to see what happens next.
Well, if he's called Alan, you know, they've got a good sign up there, haven't they? You know, anyone called Alan on the team? Yeah.
Anyone called Alan, naturally, you know, that was the thing that caught my eye, first of all. I thought, well, there's somebody with my name, so can't be all bad, you know.
Yeah,
so
you there said, you go. I don't need to know his background. He's called Alan. For me, that's good enough.
but
I'm buying stock. He's called Alan.
But the fact is, this guy's developed and launched BBC iPlayer, you know, which is obviously...
That is secondary. That came secondary to him being called Alan. He was called Alan first. You know, let's get this importance in priority here. Okay, let's what else? That's CTEA.
And that's CTEA. Yeah,
the chart again. So I know it did bump up recently. Okay, it's not much of a chart to go on because of a change of name and etc. Okay, what else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, cosmetics, get your makeup out. We're looking at War Paint. The epic code is W7L. Now, this is a company that's got a valuation of some 180 million. War Paint have two divisions. They have their W7L brand, which is their own flagship brand, which is cosmetics. You know, as you can imagine, I know all about cosmetics. But there you go. Last year, they acquired Retro Holdings, a color cosmetics business with a great distribution or series of distribution outlets, including Boots, Superdrug, Asda, they've carved out a niche for themselves in the industry with their infrastructure, their delivery mechanisms, and the distribution outlets they have. This was picked up by Vectorvest, just looking at the fundamentals, they're delivering all the way. The full year results in April this year, This was their first full year as a name listed company. 15.5% hike in pro forma revenues to 31 million. EPS grew by 8% to 9.5p, and they also paid a final dividend of 2.6p, which is 4p on the year. Subsequently, about a week ago, we had the AGM statement. The company continues to trade in line with expectations. Outlook for the rest of the year is very encouraging. The order book for Christmas sales is well ahead of last year for W7 and Retro Brands. And that was followed by a note from Harbin Research, who said... So the company has never made a loss, very healthy profit margin, net debt free, and has a much faster growth rate than the color cosmetics sector with a very attractive ROE. So there's an awful lot of positive fundamental data out. Vectorvest then highlighted the chart for the company. The epic code, by the way, as I said, is W7L. The stock's charted a series of rising lows during this part of the year, which it noticed bullish price action, and a measured move in TA terms would take it up to approximately 280p as a target, which is also borne out by the combined earnings growth rate and relative timing metrics provided on the Vectorvest platform. Fundamentally ticks all the boxes as a niche growth stock, but this is an exciting growth prospect, and it's in a niche industry, and it's carved out space all of its own, and I think it's one to follow. Of course, it pays a dividend too, so you know there's an awful lot to like here.
There's an awful lot to like, huh? I like that, Al. I don't know anything about makeup. I was offered the to take part in the IPO of this, and I said, you know what, I'm not into makeup. I don't really understand it too much.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's a very easy decision to make because you think, oh, do you know what? I just don't understand that. And I remember I had a conversation with a colleague I've known for years who we talk about investments a lot, and he bought into ASOS at 5p. When the stock was 5p in about 2000-2001, and he said to me, you know, I was offered it, and I thought, well, I'll take it, I'll have a go, I don't understand what it's about. And he said, I was quite pleased, I sold out at 8p, and of course, you know, the rest, as we know, is history. So the punt that he had on that could have seen him very nicely for the rest of his life. But that's the thing, you know, you look at something like this, you think, I'm not into that, don't understand the marketplace, but actually, you know, it's a solid business, it's a really solid underlying online business here, and they've got all the distribution network in place, and a number of other factors too. So
yeah, yeah. I don't. Do you know what? Essentially, sometimes I suppose when you invest in a company, the growth, and the fundamentals, the balance sheet can excite you enough, and the return you're getting can excite you enough. But on first inspection, I've talked through it, and I just thought I can't feign excitement in makeup. I've lost out, and so I've started wearing makeup, and I'm fully plastered here, mate. I'm talking to you, Al. My lip's done, my eyes done.
You got your foundation on, have you?
Everything is on. But I suppose I should have just looked in because every business at the end of it is about assets and fundamentals and all that stuff. So
actually on that subject, we talked about Bon Marché Holdings, which elicited a similar reaction from you a couple of weeks ago. And
Alan, I'm worrying about you, but I've got to say I've noticed stocks with a feminine slant sneaking into the podcast with you. So I've gone from imagining you now in your matching Hawaiian shorts and t-shirt on the south coast there to something a bit more ladylike, long dresses and makeup. I'd love that green cross dresser. Oh, you're brilliant.
As I sit here, I'm wearing a flowing summer dress, and as Billy Connolly used to say, looking windswept and interesting. But there we go.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, just actually to mention Bon Marché, they released their full year results last week, and they had a very solid performance from online sales. When we spoke about them, the shares were £1; they're now £1.10. So they've actually moved in the right direction. So again, revisit that one, might be worth another look. But I just wanted to bring that to listeners' attention.
Yeah.
Of course, we also mentioned Andalas Energy, didn't we?
Well, do you know what Andalas has gone from now? It's amazing how far, how fast a change in sentiment can happen. Because Andalas, let's be honest, under Dave Whitby, it went through a love affair because people had a nice share price rise, and you spotted it very early on there. Then it collapsed pretty much because due to the lack of things going on, and seems that it's stumbling in Indonesia for a while and fundraising. It literally did collapse in share price. People hated it, generally did hate it and everything it stood for. Now, all of a sudden, on Vox, it's been one of the most followed stocks in the last 24 hours and the last few days. And I've seen people mentioning it on social media and all that stuff. And I think, what is going on? How fast, how fickle people are when there's a chance to earn a buck, eh?
Well, yeah, but I think, as I said before, with Andalas, Dave Whitby's gone. You know, he's out. His contract's terminated. He left with a settlement which is well below his entitlement, and I think listeners will be glad to hear that. Simon Gorringe has been very, very cautious in his approach as CEO, and he's talked about the stock and talked about the prospects of the company in very sort of conservative terms. And so they were looking at a prospect. They then identified the Badger prospect, which they bought into. This is the North Sea oil prospect, which they're working with Eagle, and that's underway. That's moving forward. Bear in mind that Simon Gorringe and Robert Arnott between them have got, I think, something like 80 years experience, no, maybe not that much, 60, 70 years of experience working in the North Sea.
170
years between them, yeah, that's right. Septuagenarians there, both of them. The company put out a statement last Friday, noting recent social media discussions regarding the purchase of an oil asset, the Bunga Mas project in Indonesia, which is obviously where the original projects were based. And it says it continues to evaluate the oil and gas projects, of which Bunga Mas is one. Discussions at an early stage, all the rest of which is the usual sort of disclaimer at the end of the statement, making no comment on speculation regarding but the resource or working interest. But I think if Andalas are prepared to put that sort of statement out, given Simon Gorringe's conservative approach to running business, then we are at a very exciting juncture.
Yes.
Potentially.
Yeah, potentially.
Caveat.
It's not the first time you've said this about it, Al, but I think this time we may be at a turning point in the journey of ADL. A turning point from going down, because it's been going down consistently. Let's have a look at this chart. Look at that. That is nuts. It's been going down, 2 years. 2 years.
And, I know,
Al, you've held in there for 2 years. Give it the big up. And sooner or later, it's going to turn. It may be turning. Who knows?
But it'll be inscribed on my headstone.
Yeah, exactly.
I told you I was right.
Yeah, Alan and Las Green. Yeah, lies here. Okay, cool. Anything else, Al? Was that it? All done?
That's it, just, we've done the round robin. But take a closer look at Cadence in particular. You know, I think this company is at a very exciting juncture. And Warpaint, you know, forget the bias towards female stocks. This is a niche company. And, of course, Cat and I, 3 RNSs for the price of one. I mean, that's really quite something today. So, yeah.
All right. Lovely stuff. Al, thanks for that. And we'll speak you next week.
Thanks, Josh. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Techmar Group. That's TGP. First day of dealings with them. At 4, Koovs, K-O-O-V. At 3, UK Oil and Gas, UKOG, of course. At 2, Foot Asylum, PLC. Where are they today? Because they fell massively yesterday, over 50%. On their final results. Obviously not pleasing, I assume. If you release results, they're down 9% day. Yeah, we'll see if they bounce, but who knows. Okay, at 1, Havivo, and that's HVO. Of course, they're a company that released phase 2 trials on their flu drug, and had positive results on that. They shot up like crazy, almost about 200%, I think. Okay, time for the top 5 most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours. At 5, Infrastrata. WSP appoints as owner's engineer for Islamaji. Anyway, listen, I own stock in Infrastrata, and I don't know how that's pronounced. Islamaji? Anyway, it's INFA's ticker there. At 4, Main Energy. Asphalt Ridge Heavy Oil Sands Project, Utah. Opens. At 3, MySquare, acquisition and corporate update. At 2, Tillau Energy, entitlement offer, dispatch of booklet. And number 1, most liked to RNS today, came from Sirius Minerals. Are you serious? Yes, I am. SXX, there's a ticker there, SXX, I should say. Poly 4 supply agreement, Nigeria. Okay, that's it for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Muchas appreciatas.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.